Welcome to Intel on AI, a podcast series that brings you the latest on cutting-edge tech driving artificial intelligence in the enterprise today. And now your hosts, Derek Osborne and Emily Hudson.
Hello and welcome. My name is Derek Osborne.
And this is Emily Hudson.
And this is another edition of Intel on AI. And today's guest, we have Sheldon Fernandez from Darwin AI. Welcome.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
Hey, we'd love to learn a little bit more about you and learn about Darwin AI. Could you tell us a little bit about yourself and your position at Darwin?
So I'm the CEO of Darwin AI, proud Canadian. Darwin AI is connected to the University of Waterloo. We like to think of Waterloo as sort of the MIT of Canada, so a very technical school with a lot of technical innovation. I myself am a graduate of Waterloo. And even though the company is based in Waterloo, I actually live in Toronto and commute to Waterloo. It's about a 90-minute commute. And Toronto, of course, is the home of the NBA championship Toronto Raptors. Just wanted to put it out there. And I've always been enthralled and fascinated with artificial intelligence. Prior to actually starting Darwin, I began and started a software enterprise consulting company with three classmates in 2001. And we grew that to a capacity of about 700 people before we were acquired by a much larger company. And never thought I'd do another startup. I was planning on retiring and driving my wife to work and watching The Price is Right, but met this really exceptional academic team at Waterloo that was doing some really innovative things around deep learning and knew that I had to get involved and take another crack at it. So it's been an interesting ride thus far, and happy to talk a little bit more about the technology and what we do.
I am interested in learning about generative synthesis. What does that mean, and how does it work?
We focus on an area of artificial intelligence known as deep learning that will be familiar to many of your listeners. And deep learning, you know, in the opinion of most, represents the most advanced and powerful form of artificial intelligence and is premised on these neural networks that emulate the cognitive capabilities of the human mind. Now, our team, our academic team, have been working with deep learning for about a decade, so well before it even entered the mainstream and reached critical mass. And they realized that working with neural networks entailed three fundamental challenges. So number one, they were very difficult to build and construct. It required a lot of expertise to get it right. Number two, even when you built them, they were very expensive to run, so you needed a lot of computational resources to get them running. And number three, even when you got them to run, they were very difficult to explain, so it was difficult to get insight into how they worked. And so the innovation and kind of insight of our academic team was, why don't we ironically take artificial intelligence to bear on the problem of deep learning? And so the way generative synthesis works is we use traditional older forms of machine learning to probe and understand a neural network on a very fundamental level. And then we build up a very sophisticated mathematical understanding of the network during that process. And then we use AI a second time to generate an entirely new family of neural networks that is considerably more compact than the original, as good as the original from a functional standpoint, but works a lot faster. And so that is the generative in generative synthesis, which is really, again, a tool to help build these neural networks a lot quicker and get them running a lot faster.
So there's a lot in that statement. Could you explain a little bit more when you say probe and understand the neural network? What do you mean by that?
Yeah, so we have, again, older forms of artificial intelligence that observe a neural network under various conditions. And then based on that observation, we basically build up, again, a sophisticated mathematical map of the neural network, and then we generate new neural networks based on that understanding. And so the benefits of this process are really, you know, threefold. You know, an unparalleled level of optimization. So because the new neural networks you generate are so much more compact and efficient, you can, again, with the assistance of some of your toolkits, deploy them into edge-based devices where they don't typically run. The second is what we term explainability, so explaining how these neural networks are reaching their decisions. And the third is really just helping with the deep learning design process. So really helping how developers design these neural networks to begin with. So there's some real tremendous benefit with this core technology.
Do you have a use case or an example of an insight that you could give about how a neural network works?
Yeah, there's a very good one I have, in fact. So one of the verticals that we do a lot of work in is automotive and autonomous vehicles. And so one of our autonomous vehicle clients ran into a very strange situation where their perception network on their vehicle was statistically causing the car to turn left more often than right when the color of the sky was a certain shade of purple, right? So it made absolutely no sense. Because to a human being, the color of the sky shouldn't influence the way you're going to turn. And so after diagnosing it with them, they realized, having gone back to their data, that they had trained the car in the Nevada desert when the color of the sky was that particular shade of purple. And that's the correlation that the neural network had picked up on. So this is what we term a nonsensical correlation. It's a correlation that the neural network kind of extracts from the data, but doesn't make common sense in the real world. And it's that kind of correlation that we can explain and, of course, eradicate in subsequent designs.
Okay, that example is terrifying when you say that. When I'm a very excited person to have autonomous cars, but that is terrifying to think that that could happen. So that's great that you guys are out there and trying to take the black box of a neural network and make it more visible and help us understand what's happening inside of there. When you say you can optimize your neural network, there's a few different techniques out there like distillation or pruning. What techniques do you use?
So the two most common techniques are, you mentioned one, which is pruning, and that's identifying redundant parts of the network and removing them, or what we term precision weight reduction, which is changing the mathematical precision of the network and reducing it, in fact, so that it runs faster. Now, what we do is fundamentally different. So we take apart the neural network and we reconstruct it using AI. And it's almost like analyzing a house, taking the pieces apart and then having AI build one that's just a lot more compact and efficient because it was generated by AI. And the big difference with this technique is that you're not restricted by the original blueprint or architecture of the network, and you have a lot more latitude with which to change things and then generate something that's faster. And so it's because of this technique that we've been able to reduce the size in some instances by 100-fold and reduce the speed significantly, reduce the inference time, as they say. So that type of operation is what's fundamentally different and why we're able to get things running a lot faster. I should add that it's very important to understand that we're very complementary to the hardware and software efforts to accelerate, right? So, of course, Intel has a number of useful and very powerful optimizations for TensorFlow, the math kernel library, MLK, DNN. Those are all really powerful tools to get deep learning running very quickly at the edge. We're very complementary to those tools. And in fact, we're part of the AI Builders Program. You know, the team that we're working with there just recently published a solution brief that showed with Darwin optimizations on top of Intel optimizations, we were able to accelerate the performance of a network by 16x over baseline. Right? So that's an order of magnitude better, again, with no drop of accuracy. And that's really the promise of this technique.
That's incredible. I was actually just looking at that solution brief and thinking about the performance speed up. I love hearing about companies using our optimization tools like MKLDNN, optimizations TensorFlow, because I think a lot of people don't know that those are available. So it's really wonderful to hear that Darwin AI is using them to such a great deal of success. Can you talk a little bit more about your platform for generative synthesis? What other services are you offering to deep learning developers?
So besides just pure optimization, there's also what we term human AI-assisted design. So one of the things that we've learned with deep learning is that the development process behind it is very different from classical development. Deep learning is very non-deterministic. There's a very statistical trial and error approach to developing networks. And so what we have found is that people use our tool and this idea of AI building AI to iteratively test their models and make them more efficient. So there's machine-human collaboration tools that really tighten up that iteration and make it a lot quicker. So that's kind of another service. And then two other services that we have are, number one, our differentiating factor used to be we maintain accuracy while making things a lot smaller. We've actually added extensions to the platform now where in certain circumstances we can actually increase accuracy while making the model smaller and faster. Because again, we're using AI to really optimize the training procedure of the network, and there are things that the AI finds that just never occur to a human being. And of course, the last service, which I mentioned before, is this idea of explainability and surfacing real insight into why the neural network is making the decisions it does.
Does Darwin AI give you the ability to work through the decision making and potentially have a peek into the ethics of your model?
That's a great question. We're starting to. Related to the question you asked is the thorny topic of data bias. And that is, if your model is trained asymmetrically on certain data, it will produce asymmetric or biased results. The classic example was the Compass parole system. I believe it was in Pennsylvania, where the designers thought when it came to granting inmates parole, people are inherently biased. We bring a certain perspective that is, by definition, biased towards our own worldview. And so let's have a machine learning system to determine the parole sentences of inmates. The problem was they trained it on historical data because that's all they had. And unsurprisingly, the system was biased towards African Americans, thus reflecting bias in the judicial system that already existed. And so what we basically allow people to do, and this is recent extensions we've added to the platform, is to garner an understanding of the bias in their system according to certain key variables. So, you know, is your data set disproportionately represented by Caucasians or disproportionately represented to males? And then we allow you to determine what are the trigger points of those protected classes that are manifesting themselves in the decisions of your network. And so as we see the proliferation of AI, addressing data bias certainly is going to be a very important thing. Yeah.
Yeah, bias is such a thorny and difficult topic. So it's great that you guys are working on that. And my experience is actually as a data scientist in HR, and we always kind of grapple with this idea of we want to use neural networks, but we're always so cautious not to use them because we don't know what's happening on the inside. So being able to have that insight that you can provide and having those tools, it would be very helpful.
Yeah, and it's a lot of nuance. You know, people assume that the purpose of identifying data bias is to produce completely unbiased results. But by definition, you're always going to have results that are skewed towards some particular class system that's kind of in your axis of consideration. But the main point of identifying data bias is to see the unethical or sometimes even illegal triggers in the model and to eradicate them. The classical example that you might have heard about was Amazon's HR system, which disproportionately started rejecting female candidates, right? That's a classic example of something that needs to be eradicated. So it's very important that we understand what's going on in the model so we can make informed decisions about how we use it and when we use it.
Yeah. The outputs of your model will only be as clean as your inputs.
Yeah, so there's data bias, and an often not talked about kind of corollary to that is what we call model bias. And so that is the inability of the model to internally codify the data in a fair way. So even though your data set might be completely unbiased and you may do a lot of work to ensure that there's fairness and equality behind it, the architecture of the model itself might be such that it's actually manifesting some bias as well. So that's another active area of research that Darwin is engaged in and trying to build into our tool sets.
I'm thinking about Darwin AI and your ability to create and improve AI using AI. Are you going to put yourself out of a job at some point?
What a great question. We don't think so. You know, connected to that is there's always improvements that you need in a system. And so maybe 50 years from now, when AI becomes self-aware and we have super intelligence, you know, we'll look back and say Darwin was the trigger point for that. But you always, given the complexity of what we're trying to address with deep learning, which is a whole variety of verticals and use cases, you're always going to need improvement. And if some of that comes from AI, it'll still require the common sense and the guiding hand of a wise human being.
Makes sense. And speaking of wise human beings, is that the reason for your choice of name in terms of Darwin AI?
I wish I could say yes, but no, the truth is that our founding professor, Professor Alexander Wang, who's Canada's research chair in artificial intelligence, his original scholarship on the topic of deep learning was in an area called evolutionary synthesis, which took an evolutionary Darwinian approach to the idea of neural networks. So just as organisms evolve over many years and shred extraneous parts, Professor Wang's idea was that you could do the same thing with neural networks and make them more efficient through subsequent generations. So that's where the name Darwin came from. The irony is that he supplanted that approach with our generative synthesis approach, which he patented and which we built the company around. So it's a legacy remnant of his original idea that, you know, is no longer used in the company in a core way.
Well, I could talk for a while. You're very interesting and great to have you on the show.
Yeah, this was great. I learned a lot from this conversation, Sheldon. Thanks. It was really a pleasure to have you on.
Thank you for having me. And once again, the Intel partnership for us has been really, really beneficial. And the support we've gotten from the AI Builders program has been extremely helpful as we bring our technology to market. So thank you guys for being such good partners for us.
Of course. And if our listeners want to learn more about Darwin AI, where would they go?
So the best place is, of course, our website, darwinai.ca. We also have a Twitter feed, Darwin AI. and we post the latest news, research papers, scholarship, compelling results produced by the AI Builders team, and they can check those out. And we're, of course, happy to take any questions, and they can even contact me directly if they'd like.
Wonderful. Hey, thank you again. It's really been a pleasure. Thanks, everyone, for joining us. This is Derek Osborne.
This is Emily Hudson.
And this has been Intel on AI.